perfection is the enemy of good, right? We need to make sure that we're encouraging every step for every person, right? I have a lot of friends who I've known for a long time and they'll surprise me. They're like, yeah, like I've been eating plant-based for a while. And I say, whoa, I never expected you to do that. You know, it can take a long time.
Green Hero. Hi, friends, and welcome to the Green Hero Podcast. This is Ricard, founder of Green Hero, your go-to source for making plant-based eating easy and enjoyable. Each week, we'll be digging into the inspiring journeys of people who live a plant-based lifestyle to tease out the most effective and fun ways to add more plants into your life.
Green Hero. Green Hero. Green Hero.
Today's guest is Eric Odmundson, co-founder and managing director of Evolution, a global network and investment marketplace with a mission to accelerate the growth of the plant-based and the cell-based economy. After years of managing networks in the nonprofit and for-profit sectors, Eric's passion for entrepreneurship and the future of food led him to Vevolution. Eric, welcome and thank you for joining us on our podcast. I wanted just to kick off and ask you about your Scandinavian sounding name. just to hear if we are from the same place.
Yeah, I'm Eric Odmundson, co-founder and managing director at Vevolution. I'm originally from Minnesota, which is, I suppose, quite a Scandinavian homestead of the United States. Yeah, a Scandinavian, Odmundson. I think S-O-N is technically Swedish, and I think S-E-N is technically more Norwegian, but maybe I'm wrong. You can correct me if you know better. Like, maybe it's the opposite. I don't know.
Yeah. Sounded almost a little bit Icelandic to me as well. It could both be Norwegian or Icelandic.
Yeah.
Well, it's great to have you here. And I just wanted to chat a little bit about Vevolution and the work that you guys are doing.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you want to know?
Well, for people who are listening and have never heard about Vevolution, what could you tell them?
Yeah, I can kind of go through the origin story a little bit. It's probably helpful.
Yeah.
Vevolution started as an events and media-based company out of London back in 2016. The original two co-founders, Damien Clarkson and Judy Nadell, were kind of hosting really the only plant-based entrepreneurial events at the time. They were very large, like TEDx-style events. They weren't really exhibition events. People would come from all over the world. They would have business clinics. You know, co-founders, we'd meet other co-founders. Businesses were being started there. There'd be investors there and partners there. And so, you know, over the course of that first 4 or 5 years, Vevolution really became this hub for plant-based entrepreneurs and businesses. And there was sort of always this need for more of a platform or something that went beyond just in-person events. You know, something a little bit more than Facebook groups or things like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
COVID happened. And so the events-based industry collapsed, you know, overnight. And with that, you know, Vevolution pivoted at the tail end of 2020. So long story short, we joined forces with one of our partners, Mikkel van Derzen from Capital V. So Capital V was one of the first plant-based dedicated VCs in Europe. We brought on a few other partners as well. And at the end of 2020, we relaunched Vevolution as what it is today. So there's that backstory a little bit. But today, Vevolution is the world's only plant-based and cell ag investment marketplace. So what we do is we make it easy for startups to find investors, mission-aligned investors in the space. And we help make it easy for investors to find, you know, amazing opportunities and early stage startups to invest in from all over the world. So it's been about 15 months or so since that kind of pivot and relaunch at the end of 2020. And 2021 was our first full year. And, you know, it went really well. We have over 3,000 total users on our platform, close to 100 investor subscribers on our platform, leading funds in the space like Blue Horizon, but also just angel and individual investors from around the world. About 1,200 startups are on the platform. Again, very global. And, you know, most importantly is kind of the measure of success, right? So in 2021, again, that first kind of full year, about 25 startups secured either partial or full round funding utilizing our marketplace.
Wow.
So we're building this ecosystem and this marketplace. The first marketplace that we have is for investment specifically, but we'll go on to continue to kind of create other solutions as well that complement that. But so yeah, that's sort of what we do. I'm managing director and I do a little bit of everything, obviously, wear a lot of different hats. But yeah, just really excited to kind of talk to you and be representative of Evolution. It's great to be here.
Yeah, that sounds great. Really exciting. I'm wondering when you're saying as well that there are companies on the marketplace from all over the world as well. There is like a plant-based kind of revolution happening. Are you seeing any particular place in the world being more predominantly where these companies are? Is it Europe, Asia, the US?
Yeah. You know, when we were so well known in the UK as that being the origin, that when we sort of relaunched Evolution, we certainly had a heavy majority of UK-based businesses and Europe, you know, Western Europe. Based businesses in the US as well. So I would say the majority is kind of the US and UK and Europe. Obviously, those are sort of the, you know, most developed places in the world, you know, but I can say with some confidence about a few different places around the world that are really exciting and really seeing a lot of new innovation. So we have places like India, for example, right? There's a lot of investment and new companies that are coming out of India. You know, Tel Aviv would be a big hub as well. You have Asia Pacific, you know, especially Singapore, you know, in different parts of Australia, for example. So, I mean, we really are starting to see these different pockets of concentration when it comes to, you know, companies that are really going to start to scale up over the next, you know, 5 years all over the world. But I think primarily, you know, we have our usual suspects as far as where a lot of the innovation is happening.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's easy to forget that there's other amazing places in the world that are they're kind of leading things as well.
Yeah. And what do you think is driving this innovation? Because if you look at like US and the UK, for example, it's a little bit different. You know, like when we speak to people from Europe, they're so conscious about the environment, which is something here in the US, it's not so prominent in the media. The UK just launched in, I think, August of last year, a new food strategy where they're talking about reducing meat consumption with 30% within 10 years. So how do you see that being like different from different places as well?
So just like the question being kind of the focus on sustainability at large around these different places?
Yeah, or more like what would be what you feel is driving this innovation in different countries? Because as what I'm saying is like it feels like maybe the environment is more in Europe what's driving this transition into plant-based, while here in the US, it might be a little bit different.
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, I think that there's different drivers, you know, depending on where you are. I think that you're probably right that Europe has sort of always been ahead when it comes to sustainability. And maybe that was just a little bit more natural fit for them. You know, I can say that, you know, for example, in China just announced, or the president or the government announced that they, you know, are looking to invest in the future of food, and that plant-based will be a, you know, predominant part of, you know, China's society in the future, right? And so I guess I can't speak to like the individual drivers for different parts of the world, but I think that every country and every major region across the world, you know, there needs to be drivers at all levels, right? Whether it's consumers and consumers just being interested in sustainability and different options in general that are better for climate.
Yeah.
Whether it's innovation, just because, you know, as a society, we're always wanting to innovate and entrepreneurs are always going to keep coming out and startups are going to keep evolving.
Yeah.
Or, you know, we really need support from the federal level, right? Or from leaders across the world. And we don't have a lot of that yet. Currently, Singapore is the only country in the world where cellular agriculture products are allowed to be sold to consumers, where they have that federal regulation. And so we're waiting for this veil to sort of, you know, be lifted in the US and other parts of the world, and it hasn't happened yet. So we definitely need the support at all levels, and everything contributes to driving this forward, I'd say.
Yeah, no, it's super interesting. Yeah, I think it's very interesting the part in Europe where the media and government is kind of creating the awareness for consumers,
right,
and brands step in with a solution, while maybe here in the US, the brands are even driving the awareness for consumers as well. They're not just pushing out their products. It's a little bit heavier lift here in the US, maybe.
I think that's a good way to put it.
All right. And what has your personal journey been getting into plant-based? How did that start out?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. I guess it's kind of strange. I guess in college, I went to a small university in Wisconsin, in the upper Midwest in the United States, right next to Minnesota. And, you know, I was studying business, and then I started to do environmental science studies on the side. And, you know, very quickly I was taking classes where it was just like, oh, like there is this climate crisis and this is a thing. And so that was great. And I started to get involved with different jobs and different programs on campus that had to do with sustainability. So that was always my focus, was like, okay, like I want to contribute to sustainability, whether it's business or whether it's, I didn't know exactly what it was going to be, clean energy or whatever, right? And probably when I was 20 years old, sort of the last few years of university, I went vegetarian and it was really easy for me. I actually had studied abroad in Australia, which is not really studying. It's, you know, it's pretty similar to the US. It was more like an extended holiday. But I went there like right after I decided to go vegetarian, and it was super easy, right? Because there's a new place. It was really easy for me to do that there compared to the upper Midwest in the United States. Australia is like, you know, really strong vegetarian culture. And yeah, that's kind of just how it started for me. And it was with that environmental background, right? I just had this realization, you know, 7 years ago or so, that it just took less resources to, you know, eat black beans than a beef burger. And so if I wanted to, you know, be an environmentalist, I was like, well, then I should do this. And then from there, I guess this is more about my professional background, which I don't know if that was the question, but I'll just go into it a little bit. I worked in environmental nonprofits.
Mm-hmm.
So I was working for a large environmental nonprofit, and they had a network of thousands of sustainability professionals from around the world, right? Government employees. You know, the leaders in our city governments who are making sustainability decisions in their cities, New York, every major city across the US and other cities across the world. And we would support these city governments with philanthropy funding and with programming. And that was what our nonprofit did. And I would be going to these events with these like high-ranking sustainability officials from around the world. And they'd be putting burgers in their mouth, right? And there was just like no discussion of plant-based food choices and, you know, how that was such a major part of a future of sustainability. And it was just really frustrating. And I didn't align with it so much. It was also nonprofit, which can be really difficult work. So I left that. I started working in solar full-time. And on the side, I started my own entrepreneurial journey. So I started this, my own little local community in Colorado of sort of plant-based entrepreneurs. And I had about, you know, close to 60 to 70 members, and we were getting together and sharing resources. And that's kind of where everything started for me, was that just network kind of feel. And yeah, that's sort of where the professional journey started, or the entrepreneurial journey. And then I met the Beevolution team, and I guess the rest is history, but that's sort of the broad background.
Yeah. I'm curious about a couple of things that you mentioned, especially working in sustainability here in the US, and you're saying like people were just downing burgers at these conferences. Why do you think that people do not associate sustainability with eating meat, for example?
You know, I think the biggest reason is probably because it's something they have to do individually, right? It's an individual choice. When you have the leaders, mayors, government officials saying that we need to have high-speed rail and we need to have solar and we need to have these choices that and solutions that are like top-down, it's a lot easier to be like, oh yeah, that's not my responsibility. Of course that should be done. And so I think that's like for the hundreds of millions, if not billions of people on Earth who, you know, eat meat every day, but also probably believe in a sustainable future. That's what they're focused on, because that's what, again, like what you mentioned a minute ago, I think the media and or, you know, the government is saying is the most important thing. So it's just a lot harder for us to change our personal choices, like, but maybe it's not, right? Like I think a lot more people recycle. Like, why is that so much harder? So anyway, I don't know. Does that make sense? Is that?
No, it does. I'm also curious, you know, when it comes more of on an individual level, when it's not just policy and even leaders trying to encourage us as individuals to like be more sustainable. For example, if you buy an electric car that can be subsidized, for example, you can get some money back. Do you think it should also be the same for eating plant-based food, that, you know, if you eat half of your meals plant-based, you could also get money back on your taxes?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the plant-based industries, I think there was new data that came out in the last week from the Plant-Based Foods Association that it's crossed $7 billion as far as the total industry value. You know, that's fighting against a much larger system, right? The animal agriculture system is, who knows how much, I don't know. Yeah, is it a T? Is it trillions? I mean, it might be worldwide, right?
Yeah.
But not only that, every government around the world is essentially subsidizing that in their individual countries, right? So I don't know. I mean, if they're going to keep subsidizing, you know, dairy farmers or animal agriculture and slaughter in general, it's going to be pretty hard for us to go up against that without just massive consumer, you know, adoption. Do I think that governments should get more involved? Yeah. I mean, if they, even the playing field, if they didn't provide subsidies toward the animal agriculture industry, I think it'd be very interesting. I think the prices would be extremely telling, right? And prices are going to, would shift a lot of behavior.
Yeah.
I think maybe some of your listeners might not like to hear this, but I think that there can be some capitalism solutions. You know, for example, there are companies that exist who do provide rebates and kind of discounts specifically to brands, right? So if there's like a massive company who's just providing rebates for plant-based companies and plant-based brands, you know, that could have a big impact. So if we're not going to have those top-down government subsidies and support and have them help us level the playing field, then yeah, we have to, you know, do this the other way.
Yeah. And what do the grassroots movement look like then?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's it, right? And I think it's continuing to educate it, continuing to have these conversations, continuing to, you know, purchase the products that you want to support, you know, like going to those major fast food chains and choosing those plant-based options, right? Then that means there's going to be more of those options everywhere. And then more consumers are going to be aware that those things exist. And then they're like, wait a second, like, I didn't know that, like, I could have tofu in my burrito. Like, that's weird.
Yeah.
or new, not weird. But yeah, I think, you know, grassroots and like business solutions may not sound something that go hand in hand, but I think they do.
Yeah. And I mean, I think also a lot of people think when, well, I'm going to go plant-based now, that it feels like a all or nothing thing, you know, and it have to happen overnight. Just from your personal experience, like, was this something for you that took like some time to become vegetarian? And maybe now you're eating even more plant-based, not just like vegetarian. Like, how long did that take just in time, you know?
My favorite thing to quote in this exact context and this exact conversation is that perfection is the enemy of good, right? We need to make sure that we're encouraging every step for every person, right? I have a lot of friends who I've known for a long time and they'll surprise me. They're like, yeah, like I've been eating plant-based for a while. And I say, whoa, I never expected you to do that. You know, it can take a long time. You know, when I, for me, it was plant predominant, like vegetarian for sure, but like, you know, not 100% plant-based. That was probably, you know, that was probably like 3 years.
Yeah.
Right. Where I was still consuming cheese, for example, at like a family gathering, you know, because it was just like, didn't want to have a conversation or, you know, would have a few drinks and like have pizza with my friends like once every 2 weeks. But, you know, the only things that I would buy at the grocery store would be, you know, vegan products.
Yeah.
And the only things that I was cooking for myself were vegan. And like, to me, that felt like super great, you know, and if someone who was supporting the vegan, you know, vegan movement or the plant-based industry, like came to me and like kind of shamed me for that, I think that that would turn me off. You know, that would be, that'd be really frustrating. So yeah, perfection is the enemy of good. And if you have friends and if you have family members who are like eating plant-based, like most of the time, like that's such a win. That's so great for what we're doing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, over the last couple of years, for me, it's been, you know, a lot closer to, you know, I'd say like 100% plant-based with rare mistakes here and there. And yeah, it's become a lot easier for me to just be confident with my lifestyle. But it, yeah, it took, you know, it takes a couple of years for some people. I think that's perfectly fine. Yeah.
I think what you're saying is right. And, you know, people that we've spoken to as well that have done this transition maybe 10, 15 years ago, they were also saying, you know, there was no information back then. So it took people maybe like 2, 3, 4, 5 years, you know?
Well, especially like we only have like, you know, we've only had food options as of recently, as far as restaurants and fast food and things like that. Like that's huge. You know, if I'm in Wisconsin in the upper Midwest, there's not really a single vegetarian restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But if there's Chipotle that has this option, and if there's, you know, whatever, and now Burger King and all those other things, it's like all of a sudden, you know, becomes a lot easier to like stay steadfast with what you want to do.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would encourage people to be a little bit more patient and encouraging. And it's only going to get faster and easier where some people's brains are different. They're going to do it overnight. They're going to have this like strong moral conviction and they're going to really align with the ethics, and it's going to be overnight. And I would assume that that is more correlated with people who make that ethical decision.
Yeah.
Right. Where it's more strong and like that overnight. Whereas people who have more of that health angle or more of a fitness angle or more of like, yeah, like I really believe in climate change, like it may be a little softer. It may take a little bit longer.
I hear you. And I agree with you as well. This is something that when we speak about with our Green Hero users as well, like one of the things that they like what we are doing is that there's no meat shaming, right? That you shouldn't shame people for eating meat or dairy or cheese. Like it's more about celebrating the plant-based meals that you are eating.
Yeah.
And what we're seeing as well is that a lot of people, they don't want to stop eating meat and they don't want to stop eating dairy and cheese. The thing is just like they want to increase the plant-based food. So I think this is also something that needs to also be discussed and open to people, that they're just like, yeah, it's okay to feel that I'm part of this plant-based movement. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going 100% plant-based. You know, I'm not becoming vegan.
Mm, yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. It's a tricky thing because I think also, especially like veganism, you know, I grew up in the 90s and veganism was very tied to special like music styles, like hardcore music and things like that, where people were living straight edge. And it has always been a quite political and with an ethical conviction to go fully vegan. So it feels almost like plant-based is a euphemism of the word vegan. And that's what is also making it easier for people to kind of join here, you know?
Sure.
It's an interesting thing. I was actually speaking to a guy that I know that's running a food conference in Spain. And he was saying there's no word. Plant-based doesn't exist in Spanish. So I'm wondering for this to be successful, do they have to invent like a word like plant-based instead of vegan?
This is a great question or a great point. So I will have this person on our podcast soon.
Mm.
So yeah, Vevolution also runs the plant-based business podcast. We've done it for a couple of seasons, for a couple of years. We've been really busy building this new platform of ours, but season 4 will come out soon. So there's someone who really inspires me. His name is Darko Mandic. He runs a company called MeliBio out of San Francisco. He's originally from Serbia. And MeliBio is the world's first bee-free honey company. So they have a very, you know, biotechnological process that creates honey, real honey, without the bees. And I won't get into explaining exactly how that works. I tried the product last week. It's amazing. Tastes exactly like honey. But we had this discussion. And I think, you know, when you get into the industry and you get so caught up in labels and like this company's doing this, but they're called plant-based and this company's doing this. And he just said all of that. When we're, you know, 20, 30, 50 years from now, if we're able to accomplish what we want to accomplish, no one's going to look back and say, oh, that person was plant-based or that person was vegan or this conference was plant-based and they weren't vegan or that, you know, that company is calling themselves Cell Ag versus whatever, right? We're just going to say animal free, right? It's just animal free. And I think that he did such a great job of like articulating that and, you know, encouraging that we all kind of just get behind this more together and just encourage animal free, right? And it's not, you know, those labels and those words, like, it's kind of misguiding us, I think, in a little bit of a way.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, of course, there's some danger because I think plant-based provides a little bit of a bridge to maybe the organizations or companies or food companies or people who, you know, don't actually kind of believe in the same values as veganism, right? So that can create some issues and some confusion. But I think that kind of having the same, we're all trying to get to the same place. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's animal free. So, shout out to Darko. He did a great job of explaining that. But, you know, I kind of see that it's the same way. I try not to get too caught up in, you know, who's saying what and what exactly, you know, the label is necessarily, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. It's more like getting away from being a, having a conviction of doing this thing or that thing. It's more just saying like the most important thing is that I choose the next meal being plant-based, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And that there's that option. And to wrap up here, we're almost coming to time. Like, who impresses you at the moment? Is there any organization, brand, or person apart from the guy that you just mentioned just now?
Yeah, so Darko Mandich from MeliBio for sure. Veronica Phil, she's the CEO of a company called Grounded Foods Co. They make upcycled cauliflower and hemp cheese. They just had a national rollout in Sprouts. She's amazing and hilarious. And they're a former Australian restaurateurs. There's a Canadian holding company called Cult Food Sciences, and they're really driving, you know, the future of cell ag. They're actually publicly listed on the Canadian Stock Exchange. So that's a great one. Really inspired by someone who I met in person finally last week. His name is David Buka. He's the CEO of a company called Change Foods. Mm-hmm. They're also precision fermentation based, and they're making the future of cheese without animals, obviously. Just also super inspiring and great company. So, and of course, you know, my teammates and fellow entrepreneurs at Vevolution, they've all done some amazing things, but that's a short list for you.
Oh, yeah, that was quite a few people. I will make sure that we link them when we post the
let them know
the episode. And so where can people find you online and Vevolution as well?
Yeah, so we're vevolution.com. Our socials for Vevolution are pretty much the same across all platforms. So on Instagram, we do post quite a lot on Instagram, just Vevolution. You'll find us there. Twitter is also just Vevolution, I believe. And LinkedIn is just Vevolution as well.
And the podcast, right?
And then the Plant-Based Business Podcast. We'll have season 4 coming out soon with a bunch of great mix of guests from around the world. And then you can find me. I'm on Twitter, Eric Amundsen. So E-R-I-K. And then I'm sure my name will be here somewhere. And then
yes,
the Swedish last name. You can find me on Twitter. I talk about like basketball as well a little bit, but also, you know, obviously everything that's happening in the food tech space.
All right. That sounds great. Well, Eric, thank you so much for your time. It has been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Yeah. Thanks, Ricard. I really appreciate it. And I hope that you and everyone else can come be a part of the Vevolution community and come join us. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye. That was our episode for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. The Green Hero Podcast was produced by Andrew Rojek, and I'm your host, Ricard Bjerkdal. I'll see you next week for another conversation from our colorful plant-based world. And of course, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast or share this episode with a friend. If you haven't already, you can also find Green Hero in the App Store. Download our app and start enjoying a plant-based lifestyle today. You can also find us on the web at the URL greenhero.life and on Twitter and Instagram, where we operate under the handle Green Hero Life. All right, see you next week. Bye-bye.